Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor. Jesse Bell filling in for Dinah Jansen this week. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, and it covers the approval of funding for a harm reduction project in the city of Kingston.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. At their last meeting, Council approved funding for six pilot projects intended to help expand harm reduction services. This comes ahead of the planned closure for Kingston's Consumption and Treatment Services site at the end of September. This initiative is part of a multi-part response approved by Council in May to prepare for the provincially imposed transition to the abstinence-only Heart Hub model. $350,000 of funding was approved with the goal of funding new, innovative projects. A total of eight projects were evaluated by a United Way-led panel, and a total of just over $281,000 was allocated to six of those projects. The approved projects include mobile meal and outreach services, survival supplies for people experiencing homelessness, peer-led public safety outreach, and mental health and addiction supports at community events. Council ultimately approved the funding at their Tuesday meeting, but not before making several amendments to the original recommendations from staff. The first amendment, brought forward by Councillor Connie Glenn, made a number of clarifications regarding administrative processes, intended to answer questions and communication difficulties that came up during the application process and remove administrative barriers that could delay the pilots getting underway. Among other things, the amendment included waiving fees, clear response timelines for city staff, and prohibiting the closing of services solely due to an outstanding municipal requirement. Glenn said the goal was to ensure the project could get out the door without unnecessary obstacles.
I think there's been, as would be expected with starting something so new, a number of challenges in communication difficulties. So we're dealing with people who are new to providing some of these services, new to dealing with a lot of requirements, and as we've heard, may have challenges, in fact, meeting the requirements. What we've tried to do here is to answer those questions. So there were a number of communications back and forth, some of which I was privy to, where questions were asked and clarity was sought by the applicants. So this amendment is really straightforward in that it seeks to clarify those questions so that as we move forward, the pilots can go ahead as unencumbered as possible without conflict.
The second amendment focused on the sixth application, which originally was slotted to require a reapplication before approval. Feed the People provides a free lunch to roughly 100 people a day, every day, from a tent in Bell Park. Its application was intended to help expand that work as the city prepares for the closure of CTS. But Feed the People had not met some of the municipal requirements attached to the funding, including being in compliance with park bylaws, licensing and permits, and insurance. Representatives and volunteers with the organization expressed that some of those requirements, including taking down and storing the tent and all equipment every day in order to be in compliance with the parks bylaw, would be impossible or difficult to meet for the volunteer-run operation.
With the CTS closure in just 50 days, this marks the first time that the city and this community can work together to hopefully protect the community at large. Administrative barriers should not be what's preventing organizations from providing what the community requires to help mitigate the heavy risks that are coming.
Please don't lose sight of the people in Bell Park. What happens at Feed the People is not just about food. It's one of the few places in the city where people are welcomed without judgment, where someone notices if you haven't showed up. where people are seen, they're spoken to, they're treated with dignity, where people are living with mental illness, addiction, disability, and deep trauma, where they can sit down, they can eat, they can feel, if only for a moment, that they belong somewhere. Feed the People is not an extra or an optional program. It's part of the fragile support system that keeps people alive and connected. And we all care about these people. And we have to make sure we're not unintentionally breaking the very thing they rely on. Tonight, Council has a chance to do that. You have people willing to show up every day. You have volunteers who are ready to know and already know the community. You have trust that has been built over years and years. Please protect that. Please support what is already in Bell Park. And please make sure that when we talk about policy in this chamber, we never lose sight that it's the people that it's meant to serve. So the license and permitting and bylaws that are facing us, if you can alleviate those, then we can absolutely stay and we can take care of people really well.
Councillors Gregory Ridge and Ryan Boehm brought forward an amendment intended to find a balance, allow Feed the People to move ahead with the pilot and access the funding, while still requiring the organization to meet basic regulatory and safety standards. The amendment would allow a parks permit for the pilot, eliminating the need to remove the tent daily, with conditions including specific operating hours, a waste management and disposal plan, and obtaining insurance.
So if Feed the People is going to continue operating there, and if they're going to be a recipient of this funding, based on what we've heard here and in the public and elsewhere for this pilot period, which is of a year's time, that they have to be compliant with the other regulations and expectations that would be there for any other organization. To me, I think that the mission of Feed the People is noble. It's not a question of why. We all agree with why. It's a question of how. And so I think that this amendment can help remove one of the significant barriers that has been expressed by multiple delegations, community representatives, advocates, while also recognizing that there is a serious responsibility that is attached to this funding to be a successful applicant, and that those things have to be followed if they are to be successful and to receive the funding.
Whether it's the city, the province, or the feds, cannot fill all the gaps in society. It's just not possible. Bureaucracy is cumbersome. There are rules. There are growing pains. There's just sometimes with policies what seems to be a simple lack of humanity behind them. And there is structures and liabilities that also have to be followed. And when you sit in these chairs, it can become very difficult to listen to some of the stories and hear some of the suffering and the trauma that's out there, and at time also feel handcuffed by policies and lack of funding and other things that exist that we just wish there were more of. And this is an attempt, in speaking with Councillor Ridge, to take a pragmatic approach to a group of people and volunteers who have put together a proposal, and we're still just not able to take that tent up and down. We have new challenges today, such as affordable housing. It's a crisis. We have food insecurity. It's a crisis. There are all these things that some of these policies just are not fit or adapted to. So this is what may seem like a simple amendment, but it's an opening of a door to say sometimes you have to fix some existing policies with simple things like this, and just recognize that you don't want to unnecessarily burden your volunteers in society who are filling a gap that we just are not really well equipped to fill.
Council approved the amendment, giving Feed the People a path to participate while maintaining conditions around permits, insurance, and waste management. The third amendment, brought forward by Councillor Jeff McLaren, dealt with what happens after the initial pilot period of 1 year. It directs that any unused funding remain committed to the pilot program, calls for a second application intake the second quarter of 2027, and asks for recommendations in the first report back to Council in the first quarter of 2027 respecting continuation, expansion, or replication of successful projects.
The community groups will become more compliant over time. The city will see more things that could be done. It'll be a change in mental maps for both groups, and the community will be stronger as a result of that. But of course, we need to record these things, and that's what this amendment is for. It is a pilot project. We test which ones work best. We duplicate the ones that do, and we drop the ones that don't. But in order to do that, we need to signal to staff that although these are pilot projects, they may be renewed if they're successful, and if other people come forward, other people of goodwill and community spirit that see a need that needs to be filled, we can support them in that.
So often we get criticized for running pilots and then having nothing happen afterwards. The pilots go on and there's no continuity, there's no continuation, which is a deep frustration, I think, in a community that's got a lot of need. The original intent of the motion that was brought was to ensure that we were improving the situation and that we were finding other options to continue to support the community. As we've already heard, the need is not likely to go away anytime soon. So this gives clear direction that we want to see it continue if and where possible. We already allocated this funding. We want to make sure that it continues to move in that direction to support important services that may be missing in the community. So I think this provides that clarity. It gives us next steps and next considerations, which are critically important if we're going to change how we operate and change the services that potentially are available in the community.
While counselors remained hopeful about the potential impact of this investment into new projects, a familiar theme from throughout this council's term arose in the discussion: provincial responsibility. Counselor Brandon Tozzo emphasized this in his final statement on the motion.
I hate saying this again and again. We're putting a Band-Aid on a problem that the provincial government started. This is a decision of the Ford government, and we are doing our best to provide a little bit of extra funding to mitigate some of the harm. We can't change those decisions of the provincial government. That is beyond our level. That is beyond what we can do. We advocate for housing and homelessness. We have the Association of Municipalities of Ontario next week, Your Worship. And I guarantee you one of the hot topics, again, will be housing and homelessness. We speak about it again and again in advocacy that we do to our provincial government. Like, we've been getting email upon email to help Feed the People and help all these organizations. And we want to help. The real challenges are structural. Their affordability, their addiction, their health care. And time and again, we go and we beg for more resources, but we are at the whims of a government and what they want to do.
With unanimous approval, the funding will now be administered through the city by the end of the month, with council set to receive a report back in the first quarter of 2027 on the first 4 months. For Kingston, these 6 pilots are intended to help fill some of the gaps left by the transition from the CTS to Heart Hub. But counselors and advocates alike emphasize that the underlying issues of housing, food insecurity, healthcare, and addiction services will extend well beyond this one-year municipal initiative. However, council is moving forward with cautious optimism.
I understand the challenges with doing some new things, but I think that we are moving in the right direction.
For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Christina Laurie.
Thank you to Christina Laurie for that story. Coming up next, I have a story from the LJI reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about the trial of a Kingston police sergeant accused of sexual assault. Content warning, this story contains depictions and discussion of sexual violence. The story is about 8 minutes in length, so if you do not wish to hear the story, come back in about 8 minutes' time. Thank you very much. A former Kingston police sergeant who admitted to assaulting a female constable he supervised will have to wait to learn whether the offense will leave him with a criminal conviction. Jason Alibla appeared in Napanee's Court of Justice on Thursday, August 13th for a sentencing hearing that placed two competing considerations squarely before presiding Justice Jeffrey Griffin: the need to denounce a serious breach of trust by a senior police officer, and the rehabilitation of a man whose otherwise successful policing career spanned more than 2 decades. Assistant Crown Attorney Siobhan Wechsler is seeking a 12-month conditional sentence, a custodial sentence served in the community under court-imposed conditions. Defense Counsel Joseph Markson is asking Griffin to instead grant Ali Blah a conditional discharge accompanied by 2 to 3 years of probation and up to the maximum 240 hours of community service. A conditional discharge involves finding of guilt, but does not result in a criminal conviction. Unlike an absolute discharge, it requires the offender to comply with conditions imposed through a probation officer. The discharge remains on the offender's criminal record for 3 years after sentencing, after which the Royal Canadian Mounted Police seals the record. Ali Blah pleaded guilty in June to assault after being originally charged with sexual assault in February of 2025. The complainant's identity is protected by a publication ban, a customary measure in such cases. The court heard that Ali Blah and the complainant were among those attending a police-related celebration at a cottage in Napanee in August 2024. Alcohol was consumed throughout the day by attendees. In the evening, the two were sitting beside one another around a bonfire when Ali Blah made a remark about the complainant's breasts. Later, she left the fire and headed down to the cottage to use the washroom. Ali Blah followed her, approached her from behind, and took her into the garage where he touched her sexually without her consent. The complainant said she felt powerless to stop Ali Blah, who was bigger and stronger than she was. She was also dealing with a broken foot. She described being acutely aware of the power imbalance between herself and her supervisor. The assault stopped when she spotted another officer outside the garage and called out to him. She later went to her vehicle and locked herself inside, but could not leave because she had been drinking. Ali Blah subsequently approached the car, knocked on the window, and pulled at the door handle while she hid beneath a blanket. In a powerful victim impact statement read by The Crown, the complainant noted the sad irony of her situation, quote, "As a police officer, I'm supposed to protect victims. It has been difficult accepting that in this case, I am the victim." Before the assault, she said she saw herself as a strong person. She distilled the impact into 3 words, quote, "He broke me. He shattered this self-image that I spent my whole life building in a few short hours." The consequences have also followed her back to work. She had been with the Kingston Police for a little more than a year when the assault occurred, and she said her ability to build relationships with colleagues has suffered because of the attack. She said she no longer wants to attend work social events, has become quieter around colleagues, and worries that she is viewed either as the, quote, "girl who ratted out her supervisor," or as the, quote, "girl who was sexually assaulted by her sergeant." The power imbalance between Ali Blah and the complainant will be among the significant factors Griffin must weigh. Among the Kingston Police members present for the sentencing hearing was Staff Sergeant Cameron Gow, a former Kingston Police Association president who currently sits on the board of the Police Association of Ontario. Wechsler argued that Ali Blah does not come before the court as an ordinary offender. Although he was off duty, the gathering was connected to their employment, the complainant was a constable under his supervision, and Ali Blah was also the vice president of the Kingston Police Association, an organization that advocates for the individual and collective interests of its members and says it is committed to providing them with a healthy and safe workplace. Wechsler also noted that police officers depend upon one another in potentially life or death situations, and that an officer who commits a violent offense against another officer breaches not only the trust of that other officer, but the public's trust in law enforcement itself. While Ali Blah pleaded guilty to common assault rather than sexual assault with which he was initially charged, Wechsler said the admitted conduct violated the complainant's sexual integrity, making the offense more serious. The Crown acknowledged significant mitigating factors, including Ali Blah's guilty plea, lack of a criminal record, otherwise successful policing career, and attempts at rehabilitation. But Wechsler argued those considerations do not outweigh the need for denunciation and deterrence. She also cautioned against giving excessive weight to the consequences Ali Blah has already experienced, including the loss of his career, arguing that employment consequences arising directly from an offense cannot overwhelm the sentencing analysis. Ali Blah is represented by Joseph Markson, a Toronto criminal defense lawyer whose practice includes extensive work representing police officers facing criminal charges and professional discipline. He urged Griffin to view the case differently. Markson acknowledged that his client occupied a position of trust and authority over the complainant and accepted that as an aggravating factor, but he stressed that Ali Blah must be sentenced for the offense to which he actually pleaded guilty, assault, and argued that the agreed facts do not describe the sexual touching with enough specificity to place the conduct at the most serious end of the spectrum. The defense also cautioned Griffin that portions of the victim impact statement went beyond the agreed statement of facts, including the complainant's statements that she had told Ali Blah that nothing would happen between them, that physical resistance made no difference, and that Ali Blah was waiting for her when she emerged from the bathroom. Markson did not challenge the legitimacy of the complainant's feelings or the impact of the offense, describing her statement as courageous. His point, he said, was that the allegations, not established through the stated agreement of facts, cannot themselves become facts used to increase Ali Blah's sentence. Against the aggravating circumstances, the defense placed considerable emphasis on what it characterized as an isolated, alcohol-fueled aberration in an otherwise pro-social life. Ali Blah had no criminal record and no disciplinary record over nearly 23 years in policing. Griffin noted the extensive performance appraisals, commendations, and letters filed with the court documenting what Ali Blah had accomplished during that career, and he said that material would be considered. A psychiatric assessment filed by the defense placed Ali Blah at a low risk of violent recidivism and described the offense as out of character. The court heard that Ali Blah had been attending psychotherapy shortly after his suspension and had abstained from alcohol since January of 2025. Ali Blah also addressed the complainant directly through a letter read in the court by his counsel, in which he acknowledged the damage he had done by betraying their professional relationship and friendship. The letter also described a period of heavy drinking and turmoil in his personal life before the assault, although he insisted he was not blaming alcohol and he had, quote, nobody to blame but himself. After hearing testimony from both sides, Justice Griffin must now decide between the conditional sentence, which would bring a criminal conviction with it, or a conditional discharge. Griffin said there could be no doubt that the events of the police party in August 2024 had life-changing consequences, and he thanked the complainant for a victim impact statement that provided important context about how the assault affected her. Griffin reserved his decision, saying the court had been provided with a significant amount of material and he wanted to carefully consider the competing arguments. The sentence is expected on October 8th, 2026. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell for that story. Coming up next, we have a story from the LJI reporter for CJAI, Ted Evans, about the appointment of Diane Pierce as the deputy mayor of Loyalist Township.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
Loyalist Township Council appointed former CAO Diane Pierce as deputy mayor until the end of council's current term. Council heard from three candidates before nominating Pierce and passing the motion to appoint her as deputy mayor.
I never expected this to happen, and I feel truly honored, and I will do the best job I possibly can.
Pierce read and signed a declaration of office.
I, Diane Pierce, having been elected to the office of deputy mayor in the municipality of Loyalist Township, do solemnly promise and declare that I will truly, faithfully, and impartially exercise this office to the best of my knowledge and ability. I have not received and will not receive any payment or reward or promise thereof for the exercise of this office on a biased, corrupt, or in any other improper manner. I will disclose any pecuniary interest, direct or indirect, in accordance with the Municipal Conflict of Interest Act. I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to His Majesty King Charles III. And I make this solemn promise and declaration, conscientiously believing it to be true, and knowing that it is of the same force and effect as if made under oath.
The role became vacant on June 15th following Nathan Townend taking on a staff position with Lennox and Addington County. The clerk's division requested suggestions from council regarding potential nominees to fill the position. Nominees were then contacted to confirm their interest. Those who expressed interest besides Pierce were former mayor of Loyalist Township Bill Lowry and former councillor John Ibey. Pierce's statement before council made their decision outlined her work with the township.
My 39-year career in municipal government was on the administration side, not the council side. I never expected to give a campaign speech. That fact differentiates me from the other nominees, whom I respect for their lengthy political service to the township and whom I respect as individuals and former colleagues. They are worthy candidates. My fellow nominees and I have all served the township in our time and made a meaningful contribution in our own sphere of operation and influence. As deputy mayor, even for this temporary appointment, I would take my role seriously as the position deserves, and I would dedicate my time and talents fully. I would ask council to consider the ongoing involvement I have had in township matters since my retirement as a fundraiser, as a witness for the township before the Ontario Land Tribunal, and more extensively as an active member of an advisory committee to council for several years.
Former Mayor Bill Lowry explained his interest in the position during his statement.
When I got the call to see if I wanted to volunteer to serve in the chair of deputy, it was the same way that I got into politics. My next door neighbor back in 1999 came to me and said, "Did you ever think about getting into politics?" And I just looked at him and thought he was in space somewhere. But I went home and thought about it, and I was thinking about retiring, and that road was going to come, and I wanted something to do. So because I was appointed, it was only a 2-year term in a 3-year election. It just was all an immediate flashback when I got the call from the municipality to see if I wanted to put my name forward. And I just immediately felt that I did. There was no hesitation. You know, it was just, yes, they're asking me to do something and I'd like to do it.
Ibey also made note of the other candidates during his statement.
I have time and I believe I have enough background to fill the position. And I was surprised to be remembered from that far back. I looked at the other candidates and they're very high level people.
Mayor Jim Hagedorn spoke about the qualifications of all three candidates and how it wasn't an easy decision.
This is a tough one, but with all three very qualified, I basically had to come to the conclusion that whatever motion went on the floor, I have no reason to say no to whatever motion it is. The quality and qualifications of the people sitting here is amazing. It's outstanding that a municipality has the brain trust, the experience, and the willingness to step up and help when the time is needed. And the township is very blessed.
To support a consistent and transparent approach to filling council vacancies, staff developed a procedure for when a vacancy occurs during a period in which a by-election cannot be held. According to staff, the procedure establishes a clear framework for council's consideration of appointments. After being appointed, Pierce joined council for the remainder of the meeting. Pierce will hold office during the September 8th and September 22nd regular meetings of council. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Today's sports report brought to you by CFRC Power Plays will be a quick one. The Queen's Golden Gaels kick off their OUA football season on Sunday, August 30th in Toronto against the Toronto Varsity Blues. CFRC will be broadcasting the game live from Varsity Stadium. You can tune in at 6:30 p.m. to catch the first half of our pregame show brought to you by CFRC Power Plays. We hope you'll join us then. Coming up next, we've got your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. We start things off with Tuesday, August 25th. 23 is your high, feeling a degree colder at 22 with a mix of sun and cloud. Wednesday, August 26th, 22 is once again your high with an 80% chance of precipitation, and it looks like it'll be a pretty steady diet of rain on August 26th. Thursday, August 27th, 22 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud, feeling like 22 with a UV index of 5. Friday, August 28th. 23 is your high, feeling closer to 26 with a lot of sunshine and just a few clouds in the forecast. Saturday, August 29th, 23 is your high, feeling a few degrees warmer at 28. Beautiful sunny day. Sunday, August 30th, we've got a 55% chance of rain here in the city of Kingston, a high of 23, feeling a degree warmer. And kicking off next week, Monday, August 31st, we end off the month of August with a beautiful sunny day, high of 22, feeling like 23.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.